News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig.
Morning from Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, FM Talk 106.5. Looking at a lot of big stuff right now, but we can look at it all we want, but we can turn it over to Quinn Hillier if we'd like, from QuinnHillier.com and the Washington Examiner. And Quinn, good morning. Good Tuesday morning. Thanks for joining us again.
Good morning, y'all. Glad to be with you.
So let's start with the story that's gripping the nation, Quinn. And yesterday, Governor Kay Ivey pardoning the two turkeys, Clyde and Henrietta, just in time for Thanksgiving. Wise move, or will she come to regret this, you think?
She will come to regret it because, like a lot of hardened criminals, they will go and they will cluck again.
I mean, she's pardoned these two year after year, and they keep getting into trouble. So I think we probably need to keep eyes on Clyde and Henrietta and continue to report on any updates we get from up there in Montgomery. But in all seriousness, of course, the battle over the presidential election rages on, and a number of media outlets have declared Joe Biden president-elect. A smaller number, but certainly a number of media outlets said they're going to wait until the legal process is run through. So where do you feel that we stand right now as a nation? I know that's a loaded question, but your overview, your overall thoughts of this right now.
The overall, before we get down into the granular details of vote fraud, et cetera, the overall picture is that, look, whether or not there was vote fraud, and there almost certainly was, it's probably not going to be enough to be provable at enough of a volume that Trump can overturn this. So we are looking at a President Biden. We are probably not certainly, but probably going to have a Republican Senate, but a very narrow one, and might be just 51-49, with Susan Collins, Republican, being exactly a 50-50 person anyway. So not a big conservative majority, but a slight Republican majority in the Senate. And you're going to have a narrower Democratic majority in the House. What does that mean? It means that if we have the Republican majority in the Senate, then the worst things from a conservative standpoint or from just a traditionalist standpoint that people feared about this new regime won't come to pass. You're not going to have court packing. You're not going to kill the filibuster. You're not going to be able to ramrod through stuff on 51 vote majorities without any minority interests being considered. In the House, Nancy Pelosi is going to have a margin that is small enough that the moderates in her caucus, and there are about 10 of them, might actually have some power for once. Because you can't ramrod through anything without them, and if you don't have a majority without them, then they can stand up and say, you know what, stop talking about defunding the police. You know what, stop talking about killing private health insurance altogether, stuff like that. So that's all a very long-winded way of saying that the political system or the players in Washington might need to actually learn how to negotiate again and work with each other again to be able to do anything, because neither side is going to be able to say, I've got the House, we're going to do what we want, and then we know you're going to kill it in the Senate, but so what, we'll pose for the cameras and you can pose for the cameras. You can't do that anymore when you've got enough moderates in your own party, whether Republican or Democrat, to say, we don't want to pose for the cameras, we want to get something done. So in that sense, it might be a good thing that Washington learns how to work again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very long-winded answer, but I thought you needed all the explanation.
Yeah, and some optimism there that they can actually get back to governing if that's the case. Now, you mentioned the moderates in the House, which does appear the Democrats were able to hold on barely to their grip of the House. But in the Senate now, where it looks like it will really come down to these two Georgia runoff races between Perdue and Ossoff and Warnock and Loeffler, I was thinking about this last night, and if you let's say the Democrats win both of those seats in Georgia, and you have the Republican, Dan Sullivan, in Alaska, who's likely on his way to a win, even though who knows what's happening in Alaska. It's taken them so long to count this vote. And then in North Carolina, they still haven't called the race, but that appears to be heading towards the Republican, Tom Tillis's way. So that would give the Republicans 50 Senate seats and the Democrats 48 with these two runoffs yet to be decided. Even if the Democrats sweep those two runoffs and Warnock wins and Ossoff, then you're 50-50, and if you have a Vice President Kamala Harris, she would be the 51st deciding vote. But there's moderates in the Senate, too, and really on both sides, so I think it would be, in a lot of instances, a crapshoot how the Senate would rule, whether you got Manchin on the Democrat side or Romney, Murkowski, Collins on the Republican side. What do you think about the moderates in Senate and how they could dictate policy?
Well, again, the moderates can dictate policy at 50-50, sort of. At 51-49, they certainly can. The difference is, at 50-50, you've got Kamala Harris there to cast any tie-breaking votes, and the pressure is on even the moderates to toe the party line if it's us against them and if you're not going to get any financial support, et cetera, unless you toe the party line. If you can't win without him anyway, it's easier for them to say, okay, you know, I'm going to take a pass because I'm going to go do what I think is right. If you can win with them by Kamala Harris's vote, then the pressure on them to toe the party line becomes almost unbearable. So that's why it is absolutely crucial, both for Republicans and for the scenario I'm talking about where people work together, it's crucial that Republicans win at least one of those two Georgia votes. It doesn't work as well if Democrats control both houses and the presidency as it does if Republicans still do hold the Senate by one vote.
How do you see those Senate races in Georgia, Quinn? Break those down for me real quick.
Yeah, okay. I'll try to be very quick, but the Republicans should have an edge in both. If you add up all the Republican and conservative votes in each race, they outpoint the Democratic votes and the associated Liberal Party votes in both races in the primaries, okay? In other words, if all the conservatives had run as Republicans and all the liberals had run as Democrats, the Republicans would have already won both of those races. Plus, in a lower turnout runoff, Republicans tend to do better anyway. So the Republicans go in with a slight edge numerically, and then the habit of lower turnout elections, Republicans winning, it means Republicans should have the edge in both. They certainly should be able to pull off at least one of them.
Now, and I've, you know, historically, like you just said, Republicans tend to turn out more for some of these more specific elections when a president is not on the ballot. But I've been wondering here recently, and we'll get into in this next segment some of the voter fraud allegations, but if Republicans haven't lost faith in this system, do you think that could possibly affect turnout here?
No, I think it enrages Republicans and makes them even more eager to turn out. And the other thing is, they're in Georgia and in Louisiana, too, when they had runoffs, the tendency is whoever wins the presidency loses that party loses the close runoffs because the party of the president is sort of resting on their laurels, and at least the voters think, okay, we've got what we want, whereas the other side is really angry at having lost, and they want to have a counterweight. So they really turn out to say, we want to make sure that our side has a voice. And so, again, that's another reason Republicans should have at least a slight edge in Georgia.
Quinn Hillier, you can find him at quinnhillier.com, also the Washington Examiner. We'll talk more about his work and where you can find it, and more about some of these accusations of voter fraud, too. We'll dive a little deeper into those, Dalton.
Certainly.
FM Talk 106.5, 16 minutes after 8 o'clock, with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. And turning up your voice at 343-0106. Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on FM Talk 106.5. Also with Quinn Hillier from quinnhillier.com. Quinn, got a question here from Don on the text line. He says, are there going to be more stringent guidelines in Georgia for this runoff election and more visibility and, I guess you would say, transparency so they don't run into these problems again? Or is it going to be same old, same old?
I don't think there's going to be time to formally change the guidelines. But the difference is, whereas before everybody was watching 50 states to ensure fair elections, now the eyes of the entire world will be on Georgia, and it's a lot easier when you're only looking at one state and everybody's alerted to vote fraud. It's a lot easier to keep it from happening because, you know, you'll have media at almost every polling place. Mm-hmm. You know, people are going to be watching, and all of these shenanigans that have been going on are going to be a lot harder to do.
Well, you said eyes were on 50 states. In reality, most of us knew it would come down to 12 states, and a lot of people had Pennsylvania pegged as the state that would matter the most in this election. So were eyes, you know, not already on those 12 states?
No, they were on it, but you've only got so many eyes, and even if it's only 12 states where you're really worried, you don't have enough informed people, you don't have enough media to go cover everything. Now you're going to have the media from 50 states converging on one, whereas before you had each state's media trying to you know, police its own state, their own state, but that was it. It's just going to be harder to get away with.
How valid are the accusations, and are these basically commonplace in every election, or is something weird going on here?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. Let me let somebody who should know answer. You all remember Rod Blagojevich, the Democratic governor of Illinois?
Who yes.
Went to jail. He was a sort of a slime ball.
And was pardoned by President Trump.
This is Blagojevich yesterday saying that he is convinced Democrats were stealing votes in Philadelphia, that voter fraud in big Democratic controlled cities is, quote, a time honored tradition. Mm-hmm. Quote, if the question is, are Democrats stealing votes in Philadelphia, my answer is the Pope Catholic?
Mm-hmm.
It's a time honored tradition in big Democratic controlled cities like Chicago and my hometown, Philadelphia, to do precisely what they're doing. They say they control polling places, they stop votes when their candidate's behind, and then in the wee hours of the morning, in the dark of night, the stealing starts. Former Democratic Governor Rod Blagojevich, I give you as a witness. Look, all of this BS from the establishment media that vote fraud doesn't happen is bunk.
Mm-hmm.
They know it. I've had Democratic political consultants tell me they know it happens. And we are getting lots and lots of reports of voting irregularities, of things like in big Democratic cities, they give one set of instructions to the Democratic precincts. Oh, well, you don't have to have the signatures match, but that instruction doesn't go to the Republican-leaning precincts. You have example after example of ways that they act differently, give different instructions, give more leeway to the Democratic side, to the Democratic areas and to the Republican areas. Does it happen? Yes. Will the Trump campaign be able to prove a lot of it? At least some of it? Yes. Will there be convictions? I certainly hope so.
Mm-hmm.
That will make it harder for people to do it in the future. Will there be enough that is provable in four different states to overturn something like 70,000 votes? Almost certainly not.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, even leading into the election, listeners texting us, calling us, and us right here on the station saw a potential problem with all this mail-in voting that was coming in. And then election night, as we reported right here from FM Talk 106.5, three cities came to, put out press releases late Tuesday night: Atlanta, Detroit, and Philadelphia. And just those three cities were enough to raise some eyebrows. But I think even more significant, what we're seeing happen here nationally, is that these same media outlets that have cried wolf for 3.5 years. They've cried about Russian collusion and put out every single piece of dirt they could find on Trump are the ones who called the elections, but they're not the ones who certify the elections. So do you think this is kind of a monster of the media's own doing here?
It's look, based on the on the numbers they had, except Arizona, which made no sense to call as early as they did, all of the other calls were statistically impeccable, assuming that the votes, as reported, were real votes. It's not the media's job to determine what is fraud and what's not. So on the numbers, they were right, except in Arizona, where it was just insane to call it as early as they did. The thing people need to see is that there is a difference between little individual cases of vote fraud where you've got to add up one by one by one by one by one and systemic practices that amount to vote fraud that have to do with, well, how do you count the ballots? What is the standard for counting? What is the standard for accepting these mail-in ballots? When do you accept them? In Pennsylvania, do you accept them even if they don't have a postmark? Mm-hmm. Those sorts of things, you're not going to be able to prove, well, this vote and that vote and that vote and that vote individually all add up to 70,000 votes. But if the practices are, you know, patently unfair, if they are systemically unfair, then that's something that even if you can't prove it in court to the numbers you need, you still can show that it was a problem. You can show that it probably cost 30, 40,000 votes. And you can say never again.
Quinn, we've got
to
wrap it up.
Need to do.
QuinnHillier.com and, of course, the Matt Jones Trilogy. You can find that as well, correct?
Yes, indeed. Amazon.com.
Thanks so much.
Guys.
Yeah, man. Quinn Hillier, FM Talk 106.5. Texter said, since Quinn's a never Trumper, was he happy with the Biden election? We never got that question into him.
836 FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. Let's head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, doing great here at the FM Talk 106.5 studios, but I want to talk about the deals that are available right now at McConnell. And I went out, did my weekend shopping at Costco this weekend, so I know there are a ton of people with Costco memberships, and they get an extra special deal with McConnell right
now.
That's
right. They get extra $1,000 on some models.
Mm-hmm.
You got to check in with the new car side and find out which models those are. I know they're on pickups, and everybody loves a pickup. I mean, I think everybody's got to have one in the yard because you're always looking for one.
Mm-hmm.
But, talking about that, we traded in. I put seven trucks in service yesterday. I mean, we have got the trucks. Used, new. You can check all those out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. And if you got any questions, feel free to call Gene or I at 251-476-4141. And don't forget, you know, it looks like we're going to have a little rain this weekend. If that unfortunate accident happens, don't forget about our body shop. We got the best body shop in Mobile, and I'll say it again, the best.
You certainly
Gary
do.
Gary and all the girls and the guys back there will take care of anything. You take some pictures and send it to them, and they'll give you a price right over the telephone.
All right. It's that easy. We appreciate it, Louie.
Thank you.
That is Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and check him out online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
It is 8:38 FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig. A lot we've gotten to, a lot more to still try to get to. And then, of course, you got Jeff Poor. He's got 3 hours of talk, a lot of political talk, right smack right after our show. We're going to get 9 till noon today, so you can look forward to that as well. Mark Ingram is with Baldwin EMC, and he's our guest on the line right now.
Yeah, and Mark, we've talked in some, not the happiest of circumstances. We've talked quite a bit over these last 2 months, but some positivity here. And we're talking about a great event that Baldwin EMC is putting on next week. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me. I appreciate that. We are looking forward to having our 15th annual Power of Giving blood drive at our headquarters in Somerdale this Thursday, November the 12th. So we hope everybody will come out and give the gift of life.
Yeah, very cool, and I encourage those who are able to give blood. And I know we've seen a blood shortage here over these last couple of months, so it's important that as many people go out and do this as possible. I'm seeing here the theme for this year, and I didn't realize blood drives had themes, but we do here. Heroes Live Here. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, 2020 has been a year for all of us, and through the COVID and through all the hurricanes that we've had, we've seen so many heroes at every turn, and that includes, you know, of course, our healthcare workers, our first responders, our teachers, and of course, our great linemen that got the power back on so
yes.
quickly after these storms. So we took that in consideration and said, hey, we have a lot of heroes in Baldwin County, and this would be a great opportunity to honor them and have a theme with Heroes Live Here. So we're looking forward to a great turnout this Thursday. And you mentioned that there is a shortage of blood. I was talking to Jennifer not long ago with LifeSouth, who we've partnered with. They're a great organization. And she says Type O, of course, mm-hmm. is in demand. And then there is a shortage, you know, for all blood types with the storms that we have had and other things that have been going on, you know, in our county. So we hope to have a great turnout come Thursday.
Mark, hey, this is Dan. And, you know, about a month ago, I kind of canvassed your county a couple of days to just kind of see what I could see. The devastation was pretty remarkable. How are people doing right now? How are things holding up in places like Alberta, Lillian, Somerdale, you name it, places that were Foley, for instance, which I never got down there, but it was a rough storm. So what's the status now?
It was a rough storm. You know, Zeta was not as bad as Sally, and we're thankful for that, and we were able to restore power much quicker after Zeta because we didn't have the number of meters out. At one time, I think we had close to 35,000 meters out. And with that, it left a lot of devastation. But as far as the current situation, everyone that can safely receive power at their home or business, of course, now has power. But the work doesn't stop for us. We're in the process now of doing a lot of repairs still to those temporary fixes. We were working on those during Zeta, during Sally, and then when Zeta came along, it just added to the stockpile of service orders and work orders we had to do. And now we're in the process of collecting everything for hopefully getting some FEMA funds from the restoration cost. And we have a lot of equipment still in the field, and we have crews that are going out to pick up and identify those and take photos of that equipment. So, you know, we've got, Dalton and Dan, we've probably got at least 12 months of work to do.
Wow.
You know, in preparation for getting everything into FEMA.
And I was wondering about that because after Sally, obviously with so many without power, line crews were out doing everything they could safely to bring power back to these homes and businesses and communities. But that left a lot of work to be done. It's almost like the off season for an athlete where kind of got to repair the body and recuperate. That seems like what we're heading into as hurricane season comes to an end for Baldwin EMC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. And, you know, our linemen are a special breed, and I have to give kudos to them because even after Zeta, we had a sister cooperative up in Clark, Washington County. You know, they were hit really, really hard up in that area.
Yes.
So Clark, Washington EMC needed some assistance. Our guys said, hey, we're ready to go. So we sent guys to help Clark, Washington, and they're still there now working with them. So the process doesn't end, but the good thing is, you know, we have the lights back on after those storms, and you know, you're hoping that this Ada doesn't come our way, she can't decide, or he can't decide what he wants to do, so we're just kind of keeping a close watch on it.
Yeah, I imagine you are, as is the rest of the Gulf Coast. And to kind of tie all this back together, the Heroes Live Here blood drive, you know, you never know who it may be that needs blood. Could be one of those line workers that worked 24 hours a day to get your power back on.
Yes.
Could be somebody in your family or even possibly you, so you never know. And a good way to pay those people back is the Heroes Live Here blood drive. So one more time, when, where, and how can people get more information on the giving back blood drive?
Absolutely, guys. The theme is Heroes Live Here, and the blood drive will be held this Thursday, November the 12th, and it will be held at our Baldwin EMC headquarters in Somerdale. Life South Community Blood Center, who is our partner with us, will have their blood mobile stationed outside of our headquarters, right in our front parking lot, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And in order to give blood, you must be in good health, be 17 years of age or older. If you're younger than that, then you have to have a legal guardian there with you. You have to weigh at least 110 pounds and show a valid photo ID. They'll do a quick wellness check with you, and then you can get in the chair and give blood. You can be in and out probably in about 45 minutes.
Sounds great. Mark, always a pleasure to talk with you. And it's also a pleasure to talk to you during these less than dramatic times, right?
Yeah. We really have had some. But, you know, we've got a lot of resilience out there with our employees, as well as all of our first responders. And Baldwin County has always supported these drives, and we know we'll have a good one come this Thursday. So go to our website at baldwinemc.com or our Facebook page, and you can learn more about it. But we look forward to seeing you this Thursday.
We'll help promote it. Thank you again, Mark.
Thank you, guys.
That's Mark Ingram, Baldwin EMC Vice President of Corporate Services and Public Relations. And coming back, more Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on the way.
FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. One of my favorite dudes right there, country music up-and-comer Riley Green. That's his song right there. He's a good guy from up North Alabama. He played quarterback at UAB, and there is a... No, that was Sam Hunt.
Yeah.
Riley played at...
UNA?
At maybe UNA or Jacksonville State, one of those up there. Sam Hunt was the UAB quarterback, and there's a clip of him playing against Southern Miss, and he gets crushed in nine pieces. It's one of the worst hits on a quarterback you'll ever see in your life.
How come it's always quarterbacks that end up being famous?
Quarterbacks, they're the centerpiece of the team, right? They're, everybody, look at me, I'm in charge. And when you get on stage, you've got to have that sort of presence. And Riley does, and Sam certainly does too. 8:52 at FM Talk 106.5.
Well, not to continue this conversation too much further, but I'd love to see like a famous nose guard play country music, or maybe a long snapper.
I think that's Chris Stapleton.
You're right.
He may be the long snapper out of the bunch.
Jeff Poor has another great show on tap for today. He's going to talk with Dan Gaynor from the Media Research Center, as he does every Tuesday. Also, U.S. Representative-elect Jerry Carl, who won the race for Congress in District 1 down here. He will be talking with Jeff Poor later today in the 10 o'clock hour. Also, a lot of ears will be listening in on this conversation. Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall will weigh in on the current state of the 2020 presidential election, I'm sure. And at 11:30, columnist Pete Rehm, who he's not just a columnist, but was named this year the local veteran of the year.
That is awesome.
And just in time for Veterans Day tomorrow, we will be taking the show on the road, multiple shows on the road, to the USS Alabama and Battleship Memorial Park. We're going to be some pretty cool Veterans Day events tomorrow. Now, normally they have the parade. They have a number of things they do on Veterans Day, which, because of the current environment with COVID-19, unable to do so many of those things this year. But they're still going to put on a great show and great deal of respect to our local veterans. At 6:30 tomorrow morning, Vietnam veterans will be raising the flag there at Battleship Memorial Park. At 9:30, a flyover from the U.S. Coast Guard Aviation Training Center. And at 10 a.m. tomorrow, the honor ceremony in the aircraft pavilion. They'll also be giving awards to World War II veterans Chester Fegan and in memory of Rafael Maharaj. They're going to give fourth grade essay contest winners. They're going to announce the winners of those, so fingers crossed.
All right.
I put the essay in this year. Hopefully I'll win the fourth grade essay contest.
I wish you the best of luck, Dalton.
Also awards to Pete Ream, who is has a show right here on FM Talk 106.5, Common Sense Town Hall on Thursday nights. He's the local veteran of the year and the National Patriot of the Year. Navy captain and astronaut Kay Heyer. Now, I'm interested in Kay's story, an astronaut who also Navy captain. So it'd be really cool, and you could check it out tomorrow. Mobile Mornings will be live from USS Alabama, and then a special scuttlebutt show from noon to 2 tomorrow with our resident Marines, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. So putting together a good program for tomorrow for Veterans Day.
Wasn't Veterans Day a few years ago? Now, you guys might have been involved in this, or might have been before you were among the hierarchy here at FM Talk 106.5. Veterans Day a few years ago, there was a luncheon, I believe. I was involved in it in some way, emceeing portions of it. But Anne Margaret was in town, the Hollywood star from the 60s and 70s. She was a big deal, and she was just a awesome, lovely lady. But she came in, she was invited in for one reason or another, maybe on the text line. Some of you remember that, and you can freshen my memory at 343-0106. But Anne Margaret came to town, was part of what we did here in Mobile, and it was really, really cool.
Very cool. So we'll be doing Veterans Day broadcast tomorrow, and love to hear from you. As usual, 343-0106. So I've kind of been trying to compile a list of all the voter fraud allegations, and there's been a lot of allegations, but I think it kind of boils down to six or seven, and maybe multiple instances of these allegations. So you start with what Rudy Giuliani has said. Their lawsuits, the Trump campaign lawsuits, in a lot of these battleground states will center around. Number one, they've alleged barriers to Republican campaign observers that kept them from watching the count, which is, allowed by law. Also, mail-in ballots that did not have signatures or postmarks, along with some other problems with the mail-in ballots, and a list of dead people who have reportedly voted in this 2020 presidential
from
election.
Heaven.
Voted from heaven, or, some of the other issues they said are the thousands of ballots in Nevada from people who moved away from there a long time ago. Also, mail-in ballots from people who mailed in more than once, but their multiple votes were still counted, and more votes being counted in some counties than registered voters in those counties. That's where, if you're having trouble keeping up, that's basically what most of these lawsuits center around. But also, I know Republicans are hoping that the Supreme Court will rule on Pennsylvania specifically, and whether the ballots that were accepted following the election Tuesday, that were taken last Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, whether those should count towards either candidate's total.
If the court rules in favor of Pennsylvania, that's pretty much the election. Is that fair to say? We've still got Nevada and Arizona to worry about.
Yeah, if President Trump wants to overturn the decision that some in the media have made, it would take him making quite a run of reversals here. Because if you start with Pennsylvania and they reverse that, then as the current total stands, that would knock Biden back down to 270 electoral votes, and it would knock Trump's number up to 234. Georgia still has yet to be called. Right now they have Biden leading that state by 13,000 votes. That's certainly headed towards a recount. North Carolina yet to be called, but Trump leads that one by about 1.5 percentage points, nearly 80,000 votes in North Carolina. So he would have to flip Georgia, win North Carolina, flip the results in Arizona, and possibly Nevada as well. But a number of top Republicans saying they are right there alongside the president as he fights for this election. I mean, we've heard from Mitch McConnell, we've heard from Lindsey Graham. Our Congressman Bradley Byrne has spoken out on this. But also, yesterday, Attorney General William Barr said that they will be investigating any of these instances which have some legs to them. Any of these allegations that they think have legs, the DOJ will be looking into. So, and not every media organization has called the race.
No, and stay tuned, because things are changing by the minute in some cases. And so we're news talk. This is what we do 24 hours a day. So if it's happening, and if it's changing, and if it's going to affect you, you'll hear it first right here. And we'll, of course, open up the conversation again with Jeff Poor beginning at 9 o'clock. Thanks to Pete. Boy, how time flies. Anne Margaret was the 2010, so you weren't involved in this at all. The 2010 Mobile Bay Area Patriot of the Year. So she was being honored as the Patriot of the Year. But I just remember that she was in town, and I remember the impression that a lot of people had of her was that she was, she took the time with so many people, and that she was just a really, really lovely lady. At that time, she was probably in her mid-70s. So that was 10 years ago. But it was a very special day. So maybe tomorrow, in the midst of the pandemic, on and on with all that garbage, but maybe we can put together a memorable day, not just there, but also on the air on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, some sense of normalcy for this Veterans Day.
Yep. It's Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig getting out of here now, and Jeff Ford's on the way next on FM Talk 106.5 at 8:59.